Hello and welcome to a special podcast of Hampton Radio today. My name is Paul Wilkinson and I'm joined by James Connor, who is the CEO of Connor Brodie, an independent owner-managed company based in Mayfair, specialising in wealth management for private clients and employee benefit consultancy for corporates. Could you just please start, James, by just giving us a little insight into what you do and how exactly you got into this line of work?
Connor Brodie is a wealth management business, and we combine two primary disciplines. One of them is financial planning, which is what I do. And financial planning is all about, in the main, speaking to individuals about their longer-term retirement aspirations. You know, helping them identify how much money they need to have accumulated by the time they stop work, and how that money needs to be managed in the meantime. And the other discipline is investment management. And investment management is exactly what it says. It's, you know, receiving a sum of money that forms part of a client's financial plan and managing it successfully. So we combine the two at Connor Brodie under the umbrella of what we call a wealth management company.
So on a typical day, what entails for you and what do you get up to?
My job has changed a lot as our company's grown. So whereas I spent more of my time sitting in front of clients and looking after their personal finances in the early years, a large part of my job now is all to do with managing our business at a company level. So my week would normally involve, you know, meetings on a Monday, other than today, of course, where I'd spend until lunchtime having departmental meetings around the business, just making sure everyone's clear about what they ought to be doing and seeing what help I can provide them with. And then the rest of my time is spent, you know, mixing with some of our senior clients, just making sure they're happy and that their financial plans are, you know, all moving in the right direction, and helping prospect for new clients.
And so what were the most important factors, do you think, were in the growth of your business?
Well, I mentioned in my speech earlier that when I set up the business with my best friend, Peter Brodie, it was a very interesting time for the wealth management and the financial services industry, because a lot of businesses in the 80s and 90s had set up their business on a model where you would earn commission by selling policies. And people were seeing through this, actually, and we were the first breed of younger advisors, actually, who were championing for a new model, which was all around charging fees, irrespective of whether a policy ever got established for a client, and placing a value on your time and offering a service. So I think because we did that, and I took a lot of client service skills with me that I'd picked up from the world of advertising after my football career, it really did set us apart amongst the community of people in advertising in particular that we built our business around.
And so what do you find the biggest challenges to be in your line of career?
I think finding a good like-minded people that we can continue to build the business around will always be a challenge for us. It always amazes me when I hear that youngsters are finding it difficult to get onto the career ladder or to find good opportunities, because from an employer's perspective, it's actually incredibly difficult to find good like-minded people. And I find that a lot of people are very short-termist and short-sighted, therefore, in their thinking, you know, unable to think, you know, longer term what might be best for them and making moves accordingly. So at Connor Brodie, with clients and staff, we always talk in terms of a longer term agenda. You know, it's very difficult, I appreciate, for people to join a firm and to think about committing themselves for life, because it doesn't work like that nowadays. But, you know, we've not lost a single advisor or an investment manager in 11 years now. And continuity is everything for us. So we grow like a big family, basically. So finding more people that buy into longer-term principles, upholding those principles so that our business can continue growing as it is, I think will be our biggest challenge.
So I know you've already touched on this in your speech earlier in Assembly, but for you, what do you find the most fulfilling and enjoyable parts of your work?
I mean, I've always loved personal finance. So, you know, the most enjoyable kind of part of the job is still being a practitioner of financial planning, sitting down with clients who I'm getting to know on a very intimate basis and helping them achieve their longer term, you know, retirement goals. But it's also great as a business. You know, I've taken a lot of things from the world of sport into business, you know, seeing, you know, young talent, you know, emerge from the ranks and, you know, start fulfilling their own kind of potential is a really, really, you know, kind of fun aspect, actually, of running your own company.
And so what advice would you give to students, particularly at Hampton, who may wish of getting into a similar line of work and what roads they can go down? And
Well, the first point I would make, as I mentioned earlier, is not to chase money. So money was never a motivator for me personally or my business partner, Peter Brodie, when we set up the company. You know, we had a big point to prove. We felt that we could be very different to the traditional financial advisory practices that had been around for donkey's years. But it was always about just making sure that our advice was as good as it possibly could be, Even if at times it's meant turning around away very wealthy individuals because we didn't feel that we were very well suited to them, given their kind of needs, which is very unusual because most people, when they come across a wealthy individual in our line of work, will do anything to get that client on board. But if you are just honest with people and you let your advice follow, then they'll go away and respect you and perhaps introduce you to other people who are suited to working with you. I think that's the key, basically, to our success. That would be the advice I'd give any, you know, younger person as well. Don't chase the money. Do it because you love it. Find yourself a culture, a company that suits you as an individual. Think long term. Just spend your 20s, your 30s, just getting as much experience as you possibly can. And think longer term, basically. You know, think 10, 20 years down the road, you know, where you want to be and how you're going to get there, basically, rather than getting too short-sighted and hopping jobs every 2 or 3 years. I think a lot of young people do.
And so you've said honesty is very important, but what particular skills and attributes do you think you need to make it?
The skill sets needed are very, very different. So financial planners, first and foremost, need to get on with people. They need to enjoy looking after people and providing a service and putting others before themselves. That's a really important quality, actually, for a financial planner. Yes, you need to have an appetite to do all of the exams that go with being a chartered financial planner. So it's a 5 years worth of exams. But I think if you enjoy people and relationships and earning their trust and thriving on that trust, and you're like applying all of that to the world of financial planning, then it's an incredibly kind of engaging kind of and fun industry to be in. The skill set needed to be an investment manager is very different. I mean, the top level qualification is a chartered financial analyst. That's a very tough kind of 3 to 4 year kind of exam piece. There are 3 exams involved that you need to pass. And it's a little bit more analytical. So at Connor Broadley, we've actually sheltered our investment team from any relationship management responsibilities. You know, we pride ourselves on the fact that our investment team only have to worry about where our clients' money is invested. You know, the financial planning team will take care of all of the relationship management responsibilities. So then they're quite two. I mean, normally you'd find, the disciplines of financial planning and investment management are separated into 2 different companies, actually. But we successfully do it under one company, Connor Broadley, and have to work very hard all the while to ensure that our culture doesn't get compromised, given that the type of people that generally that investment management attracts will be a little bit different to the type of people that financial planning will attract.
And so when you hire or are deciding from a list of people to hire, what exactly do you look for? And are there any particular subjects that one must have studied and stuff like that?
We make a joke of our interview process at Connor Broadley because once we've gone through the kind of normal kind of testing that you might do to establish whether somebody knows what they're talking about in the context of financial planning or investment management, for me, as a founder of my own business, the individual is more important than qualifications. So, and I'll normally take a view within 5 minutes of meeting someone, and Abby down there, my kind of trusted PA of the last 10 years, will say that often it's less. I'll send Abby to meet the individual in the reception. I'll be as keen as anything to see if they're as polite and respectful towards Abby as they are with me. And if I get any sense that they are not, then they won't get a job at Connor Broadley. So I think, you know, youngsters often feel the need to come in and, without describing people as like Jobsworth, basically, but to talk the kind of conventional game of qualifications, etc. But I think you need to sell yourself as an individual and, you know, hone in on your values and what you can bring to a company's culture that will really set you apart in an interview process. After all, you know, companies like us are people businesses. So our final interview is always a drink down the pub with a team. You know, and we always say to, new potential team members, this is not just about us getting to know you, but it's all about you getting to know us so you can see the culture of our firm and see whether you like being a part of it. Because what we don't want is people joining and them feeling that we're imposing our culture on them. You know, to grow a good business, you want people coming along going, yeah, I'm actually up for that myself. And then you just get a stronger culture as a consequence.
I wanted to ask, in the startup years, how tough was it to get like-minded clients to trust you with their finances?
Well, I was very lucky, if you heard my speech earlier, because my founder-client kind of gang came from the world of advertising that I was working in for 5 years after my football career finished. So that community actually knew me as one of their own, working in advertising for 5 years, prior to me then jumping ship and moving into the world of personal finance. And, whilst I was, promoting pursuing your dreams and ambitions and passions earlier on, obviously it was a big calculated judgment call on my part to leave a very, very cushy kind of employed, position I had as a financial advisor and set up my own business. And I did that because the people that were encouraging me and my kind of friend and business partner, Peter Broadley, to do so were some of the most respected people in advertising. So we knew that if we had their backing, they were the top of the tree in their game, that others would probably just follow. And that's what happened. So we haven't had a marketing plan. We've never spent any money on advertising, anything like that. We've only focused on looking after you, the individual, in the hope that if we do so, and we do so amongst a good community of people that will make it worth our while commercially, then you'll recommend us to similar family and friends. That's kind of what's happened.
So the culture is much like a family business.
Absolutely, yeah. And family is a word I often
talk about actually in interview processes, just because I'm interested in it. I think, you know, if you come from a good family or a good school with a good culture like this, then you know, you're more likely to get on at Connor Broadley, basically, because the relationship that you build with clients is an intimate one, basically, as you share with family members.
And so when did you realise how important that creating such culture would be for your business?
Well, I mean, I learned all about culture when I joined Millwall Football Club. You know, so 18 years of age, it was very evident, basically, what made for a good dressing room environment and what didn't. So, and as soon as I moved into the world of advertising, actually, you know, advertising agencies are all about brands and culture. It's what they live and die by, basically. So I was very lucky to be exposed by some of the advertising industry's best talent, and therefore the best thinkers when it came to culture, whether it was of their own firms or companies that they were representing. So I had an incredibly kind of fortunate education, really, when it comes to kind of culture. And Peter Mead, who was the Millwall chairman that I mentioned earlier, that had founded the UK's largest and most successful advertising agency, well, that was all based on a culture. And the founder kind of group of people that set up his business 30 years ago still meet 6 monthly now for dinners and drinks together, which for me was just a mark of what things must have been like in that company. And I've always kind of wanted actually to replicate that in the world of financial planning.
I just wanted to ask, obviously you set up your own business. What were the highs and lows of setting up, and when you did your sporting background have an influence on how you run the business daily?
Yeah, well, basically, I remember Peter Brawley, so my best friend, us turning up on day one, and was it Young Enterprise, whatever you have here at school? I remember doing that, basically. That was my only ever experience in kind of setting up a business, and that was obviously years ago. And I do remember, in terms of like taking a sporting mentality into kind of business, I remember looking at Pete, who I'd caught like daydreaming on like day two, only for about a few seconds. But I remember just stopping and basically saying, Pete, you're just daydreaming there. Now, there must be something you can do rather than daydreaming to further this cause, because it's just me and you at the moment. And it was just that. We lived and breathed it 24/7, basically. So that was a mentality. I mean, we literally, it was kind of like, you know, heart and mouth moment when you set up your own business. We had remortgaged our homes. So I'd say a low point after 18 months, the business was doing well, but we hadn't actually paid ourselves a salary from the business. So, of course, you still need to kind of eat and drink, basically. So it did get depressing after about 18 months, just looking at our bank statements and only seeing debits. And it's a really weird thing to say, actually, because what you'll get used to in your working life is you work, but you also receive money in return. And it was just a really weird concept that we're working harder than we ever had done. And we actually hadn't earned a penny. But we knew all the while we were storing up value in our business that at some point would be kind of able to pay us a good salary. So that was probably the low point. And the high point, I would say, was within 3 months of setting up in business, when the Millwall chairman that I referred to earlier, who had set up his kind of famous advertising agency, appointed us, and they became a founder client, which for me was like a really fitting kind of end to my kind of football story, really, and the start of a new chapter.
And would you say, going down a sports route like you did, did that provide you with like a lot of networking, good links to further your business?
Yeah, so I mean, hopefully people picked up from my speech earlier, my whole kind of like belief is that it doesn't have to be sport, but if you just pursue your kind of passion, then people can see the best of you, because it'll be something you love doing. So you'll give the best and truest account of yourself, and then people that are in that kind of environment will get to know you. And take sport as an example. I mean, business people involved in sport are from all different walks of life. And I just happened to find that, you know, when my career came to an end, there was a helping hand, you know, came from the Millwall chairman, who I'd never met before. Because as a player, you don't seek to kind of get to know the board and the chairman. You're just worrying about your football career, frankly. So I think, you know, with you and your kind of hopeful rugby kind of plans, you know, there'll be lots of people you'll come across that, you know, can take you into different walks of life beyond your rugby playing days.
And so, of course, you've spoken about how important it is looking in the long term. So for you, you're still young. So where do you hope to see yourself and your business in 5-10 years' time?
I was wondering whether I'd get asked this question earlier, actually, because there's me having had like almost 3 different careers to date. And I honestly don't know whether the kind of football ghost has been properly put to bed with me in my life. There might be a time where I return to kind of football coaching at some point, but it was certainly too raw, basically, back in my 20s. But with Connor Broadley, I mean, there's so much consolidation going on in the world of financial services where, you know, good small businesses are getting snapped up by bigger ones. But that whole consolidation kind of game is all about money and the bigger companies getting bigger and paying even less attention to the end client. And that's everything that we're not, basically. So when we speak to new potential clients when they come through the door, one of the first things I'm at pains to kind of point out is that Connor Broadley will be here in 25 years' time because we literally live and breathe it here. You know, continuity is everything, culture is everything to us. And there's going to be nothing more fulfilling than, you know, us developing, you know, a group of other like-minded people that can actually run the business as Peter and I, you know, get older. So we want to continue doing exactly more of the same, bring more like-minded clients and employees on board, and see where it takes us.
I'd just be interested to hear about the sort of clients you're dealing with, what sort of individuals they are, their background, that sort of thing.
Well, there are two services that we offer. One is a transactional service where we can just do a one-off job for an individual and then leave it to them to return to us at a later date to review the suitability of that advice. But 99% of the business that we do is what we call for our ongoing services. So it tends to be, you know, people are in or approaching retirement. So they've accumulated, you know, their money and they need to have it managed very carefully and their expectations managed very carefully when it comes to knowing whether they're going to have sufficient funds to meet their income needs in retirement and how their eligible longer term savings will actually evolve in value.
In terms of sort of the relationship side of your business, what have you found have been the biggest challenges in terms of dealing with clients?
Well, we're very lucky at Connor Broadley because we never had to compromise on our beliefs going back to kind of year one in business, because once our founder client came aboard, you know, via the Mill chairman I mentioned and his kind of advertising agency, the culture of that firm was such that all of the people were really nice. And it just meant that we didn't have to kind of sell ourselves short and onboard clients that we didn't like. And of course, what happens is, and you'll find if you have a service business that you'll get more in demand, actually, if you kind of like this, but clients are not used to being questioned as to whether or not they're right for you. So if we get a wealthy individual walk through the door, I think their starting point in their mind is, well, you must want me as a client because I've got a lot of money. But if you play that different card and say, well, actually, look, part of today is all about chemistry meeting and us finding out whether equally you're a good partner for us because we're about long-term relationships, continuity, etc., etc., then right from the off, you can kind of call a spade with a client and find out whether they're right for you. So I think mistakes that a lot of other companies make is they'll onboard anyone as a client if they've got sufficient funds. And it ends up just diluting your kind of company's culture as a consequence. So we're very lucky, really, not to have had many challenges. We did, for the first time in 9 years, we actually changed our fees. We increased our fees because we established that we needed to charge higher fees to maintain our profit margins and to continue paying the going rate for good quality people to join us. And we did that knowing actually that our founder clients were probably paying fees which were almost 50% below the going rate, which has never changed from day one. And we often laugh actually in that we lost about 6 clients of about 400 during that process, which is actually very rare because most companies lose an awful lot more. But they were the 6 people that actually were a bit of a thorn in the side. So we were actually really fortunate and lucky to kind of have them move on. It was really funny how that worked out.
You're sort of clearly a very strong believer in this culture you've set up at your business. And you've said that's come from your days in advertising and football as well. Do you think Hampton instilled any of that in you as well? Sort of what did you gain from being a Hampton?
Yeah, like I'm saying to Frank, I always like the fact that I came from the Mall prep school, so, and I've lived in Twickenham all my life. And I like the fact that Hampton was a grammar school back in the day. And I always felt, if I may, it's a bit controversial going on air saying this, but by comparison to LEH, I always felt the Hamptonians were a bit more grounded and that we had just had a more kind of, you know, kind of feet on the floor outlook and mentality and a sense of togetherness as a consequence. So clubs that I was involved in here, I mean, it was mainly kind of football, of course, and sport, but I always felt there's a real kindred spirit with Hamptonians. And we have a Hamptonian in our ranks, actually, at Connor Broadley, which I'm quite proud of, and he's been one of our best recruits to date.
And so throughout the interview we've gone over certain attributes and things you would look for, but just for any Hamptonian now, what particular advice would you give them going through the school, or whether they're at the latter end of the school?
As I said earlier, I think you've got to use school to your advantage. So it will give you confidence and it will give you a set of values, but just try and get involved in as many different things. See if new interests, you know, kind of spark up that you've never considered, because that might take you places that you never dreamt of just yet. But, you know, just drawing parallels from my own kind of experiences, I would say, you know, if you're good at something and you really enjoy it, then you should pursue that, because you don't know where it's going to take you, even if it doesn't work out. And not to be scared, as I was saying earlier, because when I was 18, it was a scary moment, because all of my mates were going off to university and my teachers were telling me to go to university. So I almost thought I was doing something wrong. I couldn't understand it, actually. But I just concluded, no, well, they were wrong and I was right, because I knew what I wanted to do and I was going to go on and do it. And my life would be very different, actually, if I'd followed that conveyor belt. And equally, when then my football career came to an end and I worked in advertising and I was doing very well 5 years later, you know, I had family, friends questioning why I was moving. You know, I said earlier, I took a 90% pay cut at 27, earning an equivalent minimum wage. But I knew, actually, that financial planning was probably going to suit me as a personality much more over the longer term, and I would basically prosper as a consequence. So I say that you've got to really hold on to that. And if you find yourself questioning whether university is right for you, and it's a strong feeling you have, listen to your instinct. If you find yourself at university and you're questioning whether it's the right university or course that's right for you, again, question it. If your instinct's telling you that, don't just blindly continue on the same path like everyone else is, because everyone else is doing the same thing. You've got your own life to think about. And equally, when you move into your kind of you know, careers beyond school, you know, you might land a dream job in a company thinking on paper it's right for you, but you might find the culture or the job doesn't actually suit you. Well, if you're hearing those messages, then actually, you know, do something about it, basically. Don't just follow the norm. Don't just sit on that conveyor belt in life, because you won't end up fulfilling your potential.
And finally, I'm just cautious, it's something we haven't touched over. Was it, when you thought of starting the business, was it always something that you definitely wanted to do, going in with your best friend? Or you've already said about him daydreaming for a few seconds, but yeah. Do you ever find that dynamic maybe works against you sometimes, despite being such good friends?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I often say to clients, you know, if you're fair, it's like a marriage. Why should it go wrong if you're fair to each other? And that's how you've got to approach it if you're in business with your best friend. So if you're fair to each other, you've got to have a really open and honest kind of relationship. And I definitely benefited from my playing days at Millwall, actually, in that regard, because it was just raw in the dressing room. You know, anyone would say anything, you know, if it was on their mind, to another player. But only being really, really honest like that, you know, can a sense of understanding emerge between people.
Well, thank you very much for that thoroughly interesting and enjoyable interview, James. We hope to have you back on the sports podcast soon. So yeah, thank you everyone for listening.